Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello all, how are you? And welcome to episode 148 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Firstly, as ever, a big thank you to all our Patreon supporters, without whom we would not be able to produce this podcast. And although this content is free for everyone, if you think you'd like to donate from as little as £3 a week, just go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll see a Linktree drop-down box. Follow the link to Patreon, and for the price of a cup of coffee per month, you can help this podcast keep producing good content. Well, this episode, like that a few weeks ago, is focusing on Thought Stavery's factory project over in Silvertown that ends at the end of this week, on the 22nd of October. So for this episode, back to back, I'll be speaking to three more of the curators. That is Rosalind Davis, whom I'll also be in conversation with on the 21st, which I mentioned on the previous episode. Contact myself or Rosalind Davis if you'd like tickets. Then after Rosalind, you'll hear from Fiona and Anna from the Recreational Grounds, followed by Pei Shan. As I mentioned previously, the Ministry of Arts are showing with Gallery Number 32. You'll be aware that we've not spoke to Meg or Kieran in this series. That's because we've already got a full episode lined up. But as far as the factory project's concerned, as soon as you come down from the first project space into the yard, you're confronted with project number 32's installation, Between Frames, where a number of artists have reacted to a given concept, all using a door as their canvas. Part of that brief was as follows. Between Frames encapsulates the in-between moment. It is a liminal space, a passing place, where everyone exists in movement, not interacting, existing in an individual being, but in the same situation as others. The artists were given a door, or multiple doors, to adorn, morph and alter, constructing an entry to their space, their world. Creating the door is an entrance into their frame. Each work will stand solo, uncanny and monolithic, offering its own route. Viewers can freely move between, choosing which route to take and what world to enter. Today we are faced with choices that are altered. Everything feels skewed. The usual routes are blocked, coded, embellished or diminished. And as we coexist, passing others every second, we are looking to cross the liminal veil and pass between frames and enter another world. Ministry of Arts co-curator Lee Ainsworth took the lead in this project, which we called Lost Connections. It's a double-sided artwork. To coincide with a brief, we decided we wanted two doors, but one inside the other. We wanted to somehow combine time and direction, so we started with a framed fire door. And as you may be aware, fire doors are generally used in a panic. And in a panic, you open that door and run straight forward. But within that door, we wanted to place another, an aged garden gate. That has connotations of a more relaxed mode. And on the back of this door is a direct response to the concept, in the form of a poem created by Lee. And it reads as follows. Do we turn left, maybe choose right, pause momentarily, or march on with the goal in sight? And as you move round to the front, we concentrate on the age difference of the two doors and the stereotypical little bit of graffiti, so-and-so was here. So with that in mind and their solemn appearance, we put text on top of one of the doors, which stated, I want you to hear me, I'm sure you can see me. And at the bottom of the aged inner door, we wrote, was here. At the bottom of the other door, we wrote, is here. And with the 20 or so coloured marker pens attached, we invited the viewer to sign the outer door of those that is here and leave a message on the inner for those that was here. And as all artworks, once they're placed in the public realm, they change, morph and sort of take on a life of their own. And to see what sort of life our Lost Connections has taken, I'm afraid you'll have to go down to the factory project, which closes this Friday. And you're about to hear from three of the curators, Rosalind Davis, Recreational Grounds and Pei Shan.
Right, Rosalind, so let's talk about you then, Sharif, for this episode.
Talk about you, but...
Well, for the factory project, you're one of the curators. Could you tell us a little bit about Rosalind Davis before you tell us about the people you're curating?
So I'm Rosalind Davis. I'm an artist. I'm a curator. I graduated from the RCA in 2005. And before that, Chelsea College of Arts. And I started curating when I set up an artist-run organisation, which was originally in our studio complex in Deptford. And it was called Core Gallery. Not my choice of names, but basically managed and then started kind of curating open calls and studio members exhibitions, as well as invited kind of calls with, I'd bring in artist curators so that they could use this space as a testing ground in a way to develop their practice. And I kind of started to instigate things like artist talks and did a lot in 2 years. It was completely voluntary. And then we set up Annabelle Tilley, Elizabeth Merton and I set up DIY Educate. And that kind of was an artist education program that we kind of put within the gallery program. And when we lost our building, it was kind of a good opportunity to go into another space. This may be too long, but ASC had this huge, in New Cross Gate in London, had this huge kind of communal space within a studio building. Yeah. And they said, we'd all been made homeless, basically, from our studioless. And they said, do you want to have this space? We had a meeting with them. So I took as many of the artists that wanted to come into the new space, into that space. And we convinced them to maintain a gallery kind of space. I mean, it was, it's in a concrete building. The gallery was, not front facing or anything kind of sexy or cool or whatever. But it was a space. And so we were able to continue to kind of program under Zeitgeist Arts Projects, a curatorial program, an art education program, tutorials, art tours, everything like that with Annabelle Tilley. Elizabeth went off and did other things.
And that I attended one of those myself.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, a long time ago. Obviously, it was a long time ago.
Everything. The terrible thing is, you need to keep reminding people.
Yeah, sorry for interrupting. Go on.
No, not at all. I'm sorry. That was a really long story. I'm usually much more succinct.
That's quite all right.
But anyway, it led on to sort of becoming a curator, working for Colley Brister Gallery, writing What They Didn't Teach You in Art School was something that came our way towards the end of running Zeitgeist Arts Projects. And I teach a lot, I mentor a lot. I'm also a designer. I work for Daisy Green Collection. I'm working on their garden design, which happens when Colley Brister Gallery closed the opportunity to work on a huge sort of garden design,
yeah,
which I see as an extension of my painting work. And that's quite epic. And then gone on to do other things with them. So that's kind of now some of my paid work too. Sometimes I sell paintings, sometimes I don't. But yeah, it's all just part of my practice. And I think what the important thing is to say is that when I speak to people about it, is that being an artist isn't just about, as you know, like literally sitting in a painting, like painting in the studio. It's about your wider, like this conversation is me being an artist. It's like these conversations. It's about how you maybe like fill your home, how you create a network, do a podcast, you know, do a talk. And it kind of, it's about this fulfillment and nourishment and about creative conversations that are really pertinent, but also stimulating. Like I wouldn't want to be anything else, you know?
No, definitely. I mean, the artist's hat, there isn't just one of those hat. You've got an entire hat rack, haven't you? Of
yes.
Things that you can do and part that is part of that process.
And all the people in my show at the factory, I had a long list to think about in terms of space, but you know, it was like between 8 to 10 artists per curated section. And then I also thought about the people that are, I mean, there's lots more people I could have chosen, obviously. But I narrowed it down to this idea of what the work would look like in the space, also how present people would be, how engaged they would be. But yeah, it's all for my space, it's generally site-specific sculptural installations, and a lot of people are making things there, including myself, but also people that make me laugh. You know, I think that we'll have a laugh on the day, on the week, on the whole week that we're installed. And all the other days that we're going to be there, which is great. And that's the kind of like, and after so long, why wouldn't you want to be there? And I just want to be nourished, you know, and because of the nature of the so many hats, as you say, is that I'm kind of reserved 3 weeks of my life to this exhibition where I'm going to be there quite a lot, be very present, do talks and be really engaged and like basically yum up all the things that I've missed for the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, it does feel to me, going through, like looking at artists' work on Instagram and on the internet, it does feel like people are trying to add a little bit more sort of colour and laughter and happiness into their work after the god-awful 18 months that we've just had. And looking at the work that's going into the factory, you can properly see that as well, you know. It does seem to be coming up to the surface.
Yeah, well, I think with my exhibition at the factory,
which is titled
Trace Elements 1971. So the idea with the factory, I'm not just putting artists that I like and know in it. I'm thinking about the context of the space and the building and the history of the building. So everyone is making, as I say, site-specific installations, but it's all about transformation experience, but also the idea that you can't let go of the past in terms of it's always embedded within part of a building.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a lot of different ideas that are going on, but so Silvertown, where we're going to be having an exhibition, was created in 1878 in the Victorian era. But it's also the industrial era. And then the first day that we went on a site-specific visit, Justin Hibbs, my partner, who's also in the show, he had this T-shirt called 1971. We went to have like lunch after with some of the artists, and we were like, maybe we should call it 1971 as a sort of joke, because you know, it just seemed kind of ambiguous.
Yeah, of course.
And then I started looking up, because that's the nature of what I do, is I start researching the history of the building, Tate Nile, 1878, 1971, what happened in that year? And it was the year that basically people had home computers. That was the first time of microprocessors. So that kind of collision between the industrial era and then the digital era. And but also it's the year that Disneyland opened.
Oh, wow.
And so in 1971, the digital era and one, like, basically Disneyland, and then showing, kind of thinking about in the context of a building that was created in 1878, was an interesting collision in my mind of, like, how do those things fit? And they fitted within the artist's work, because there's a lot of kind of theatricality, there's a lot of magical experience, there's a lot of sort of illusion and materiality. And so obviously with Disneyland and Disney, you know, this kind of idea when it first started was everyone was drawing these, like, hand-drawn drawings that are animated. We can now all do that on our phone.
Yeah.
And 1971 isn't that long ago, but it's sort of ancient at the same time.
Yeah.
So you've got your first computer that is redundant. So I kind of am interested in this sort of collision of these different times and histories and so on, and also what other people are making within their work. So that's, I don't know if that even makes sense. I'm saying it out loud for the first time. So this is
Well, I've followed it entirely, so it must be okay. And where are you within the factory? Because obviously no one will be aware yet, but there's three or four main areas. And
yeah, so I'm next to Thorpe Stabbury. So we requested, we're at the back of one of the warehouses where there's a stairwell.
Yeah.
So Sasha Bowles is making work specifically around the stairwell. So nice. A site specific, but we also want people to come up on the stairs to have an aerial view. And Andrew V. Wright is going to be doing a latex cast from one of the windows above the stairs. So it's going to be really special, I think. The other thing as well is that my grandfather worked at Tate & Lyle, and my mother's first job was at Tate & Lyle.
Brilliant.
And my uncle apparently used to go kart around Tate & Lyle.
Excellent.
And I was speaking to a friend of mine, and her dad worked at Tate & Lyle. And yeah, so all these kind of stories, that's what I mean about trace elements. It's like, you know, Andrew V. Wright is basically taking a trace of the elements with her latex, but it's also about that, you know, when you see the space, it's beautiful, you know. And I think what me and the artists really want to do is embrace that space as a playground, you know, but not ignore its beauty.
And how many artists have you got in Trace Elements 71?
The 1971, we've got 9, including myself. So yeah, and everyone was sort of tasked to say, like, up to 10. And amongst that, there's a painter who's kind of making an installation, Fabio Almeida. Lexi is making some sort of epic sculpture that she's been working on in a studio for about 3 years.
Brilliant.
So yeah, that's going to be my first day of installs with her and her partner.
Well, that's the good thing about this project. There's definitely no shortage on space, is there?
Not at all. I mean, she was like, I think my sculpture's quite big. It's like 3 meters wide. I was like, I think we'll be fine.
Today I'm speaking to Fiona and Anna from Recreational Grounds. Hiya.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Could we start by just telling us a little bit about Recreational Grounds?
Yeah, definitely. So the project was initiated by myself and artist Tim Ralston, and we were working in a disused car park in Elephant and Castle on the Aylesbury estate. And over the course of that, we had 6 exhibitions, and we've now become slightly more of an itinerant project space where we essentially work across different sites.
Yeah.
And Anna was one of the first artists who was involved in the exhibition program. And as we've kind of changed and our careers have grown, we ended up inviting Anna to join the curatorial team to
Excellent.
Help out and give a bit of a support and, you know, bring some new ideas to the project too.
And when was that, Anna, that you joined?
Well, I joined the previous exhibition that we had in Thameside Studio, so it's been a few months now.
Nice. Yeah. And are you settling in okay?
Fantastic. It's been absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
But it was just in time to come on to the exhibition that we're talking about today, being Thorpe Stabbury's factory project in Silvertown, E16. Could you tell us a bit about what you're showing there and who you're showing?
Yeah, do you want to go ahead, Anna, and explain the project a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So we invited 10 artists, including ourselves, to take part for this exhibition. We tried to keep the same ethos and idea of what we have been doing so far. All the artists, they're free to respond to the space, and we have been a few times see the space with the artists, and it's been a really nice experience. So we've got Will Cruikshank, Susan Jacob, Juliet Mayo Partoli, Tim Rostel, Fiona Gray-Dimi. Actually, I would like to say here that we've got 3 collaborations in the show. I think this is part of Recreational Crown's ideas, that we can kind of stretch our ideas and get some more out of it. And we thought, okay, that's a great opportunity to collaborate with someone and create some new work for the shows.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also with it being such a big space, then it was a nice challenge for us, because we just thought, well, actually, if we collaborate with people, we can both put a little bit more money in and do something quite impressive. Yeah. And with Amber and Ralph, they've collaborate as a pair quite often anyway, so it's nice to give them a platform to show something that they've been working on for a couple of years too.
And normally when you're working within a group, you try not to go too large, because you don't want to step on the toes of the persons left or right of you. But for the Factory project, that is absolutely enormous and there's space all around, you can afford to be quite bold with the size of your artworks as well, can't you?
Yeah, you almost have to be, don't you?
Yeah.
Because Anna was in the studio today and she's having technical problems because she's made her work so big she can't fit it in a van now.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Do you know where you are on site?
Yes. Yes, we have been there and we've saw the space. And yes, some of us know exactly where we've got the space to build our work as well. So it's like me and Fiona as well, we do site-specific projects. So I think it's good to know the exact location.
And for anyone looking to find the work of Recreational Grounds, where would they go? Because there is several sites within the site, isn't there?
Yes, yeah, so we're in the main factory where most of the installations and exhibitions will be, and where when you walk straight in, the main shutter will be on the left-hand side. So you won't be able not to see us, hopefully. We're Excellent. Kind of making sure we've got quite, you know, bold and interesting work, so we hope it'll catch everybody's eyes.
And are you all together?
Yes, yeah. We are.
Excellent. And is there a title to the Recreational Grounds group or theme or not?
Well, we always do Recreational Grounds with a sort of subheading. So for this one, it's just the Factory Project.
Nice.
We tend to be quite sort of literal. We have a bit of a kind of, we don't over curate. We like the work to sort of speak for itself. So yeah. In a way, we don't tend to have the theme is making site responsive work and how the building informs it. So we kind of be quite straightforward with our titles too.
Are you able to give any insight into any of the works that are going into your show?
Yeah, we can give a few teasers, can't we? So I'm working with Charlie Peters, who's another artist friend, and we did a collaboration with some prints, and we've decided to scale it up, and we're taking elements of both of our practice, including kind of colour palettes and some of the themes and motifs in our work, and we're going to be making large-scale window installation, which is a little bit different.
Nice.
Sort of, it's within kind of what I'd normally do, but then also a little bit different in the way that we're going to be presenting it. So that's a bit of a surprise. And then Anna's doing, well, you can tell a bit about your collaboration too.
Yeah. So me and Ben, we're making a painting installation. We're both working at the main medium of our work is painting. And we've got similar landscape is something that we've been kind of both working separately in our practice. So we thought to make this a painting installation, exploring the idea of the representation of a space in painting by using the space. So it's giving the idea to the viewer to have to walk around and see the paintings in different angles, and also overlapping the two paintings, and so we're gonna use a metal frame to structure to hang some paintings, and then
nice.
on the back on the wall.
Oh, good. And is that something that you would normally do in your practice, either of you?
Yes. So I used to do lots of painting installation. Ben is painting mostly on canvas and linen. So I most of the time do something that respond to a painting and something in front and how they've got dialogue between them. And so we try to do that together as a collaborator. So yeah, it will be interesting seeing the space, I will say.
Yeah, good. It's going to be the same for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, we sort of, because it's such a large space, we wanted to kind of work with the height as well. So some of the collaborations will be Amber and Ralph, they're going to use the metal framework for the building. And then Juliet's going to be having these really large hanging pieces, which, you know, it's a bit of a challenge for her because they're the largest pieces she'll have ever, or the longest pieces she'll have ever made. Yeah. And then Susan Jacobs is working along the floor. So there's kind of all these things that are going to be hopefully visual feasts at different kind of heights and draw you around the space too. So as Anna was saying with her work, does this aim to be quite sort of immersive?
Excellent. Fun. I'm looking forward to seeing everything. And there's, as we say, there's 8 or 10 curatorial teams?
Something like that. I think it's around 10, but it's nice because everyone's coming from sort of slightly different backgrounds, and some of the curators are very new to it, and other ones have, you know, we're probably like a bit in the middle that we've been doing it for about 3 or 4 years now, but there's other people, you know, who, you know, it's their sort of full-time professional practice. So it's really exciting to have the show that really kind of showcases what's going on around London and slightly further afield.
And I like the idea that there's no walls inside what would be our gallery, you know. So as soon as you walk in, it isn't going to have the same feel as a standard gallery. It's going to be one curatorial team flowing into the next. It really is quite exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It'd be really interesting to see how people's identities are defined, you know, by the artists that they're working with, and whether we will have these like little stamps, you know, kind of it, by comparing yourself and showing alongside other people, it sometimes heightens what you're doing, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So we're really excited to work with all the artists. So, you know, thanks to them for being part of the show, and also to Nick and Eric and Project for putting together this exhibition, because it's just really exciting to do something during Freeze Week that's a little bit different.
And ironically, most artists are left out in the cold during Freeze Week, aren't they? You know, that sort of dominates the art world for a couple of weeks. And it's nice for another group to be waving their flag, isn't it? You know,
definitely.
Brilliant. So Fiona, Anna, thank you very much for your time. And thank I look you. Forward to seeing you at the show.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much, Gary.
See you later. Bye bye. I'm now speaking to Pashan. Hiya, Pashan.
Hiya, how you doing, Gary?
First of all, could you tell us a little something about Pashan?
So I am a curator. I've been practicing curation for about 2.5 years now. I used to be a filmmaker, so I studied art and moving image for my degree in Brighton, made a few films, did a few shows, and decided kind of I was more interested in the business side of stuff and like the curatorial like aspects of art making. So yeah, that's what I started to do. I did my master's in art, law and business, and yeah, that was like a year and a bit ago is when I had my first show. And that went really well. So this is like my second, like big proper show. So yeah, I'm excited. That's a bit about me.
It's not a bad size show to be just your second, is it?
Yeah, no, I was really, really surprised and excited that, like, you know, I was one of the people that they called upon for the show. So
wow.
I'm grateful for the show. Yeah, it'll be good. I'm excited.
And as we're talking, you're on site installing.
Yeah. I'm currently in the cast, the quietest place at the moment. So yeah.
Excellent.
There's a lot going on.
You're curating a group of artists.
Yeah.
So which artists are you showing?
So we've got Chloe Falani, who is a performance artist and a poet, but she's debuting her first like proper sound piece nice. As a poet, and like she's worked with a sound artist, so she's created this like really meaningful piece, which is about 15 minutes long. Then we've got Courtney Welcome, who is an installation artist. She's from Birmingham, and her work is kind of like about race and a reaction to like institutional art practice, and just like her experiences working as an artist in like art school, stuff like that. Her work's really, really interesting and quite broad as well. So she does painting, she does sculpture, but she kind of builds everything as she fills the space into installations. Then we've got Honore, who is a digital artist. They make 3D printed sculptures through like digital technologies. So we've got a few of their pieces. We've got Rachel Williams, who is a film and like installation artist. She's doing a textile hanging that's built out of like latex and stuff. Like, it's really, really cool.
Nice.
We've got so many. Holly Jackson, who is a moving image artist and a performance artist, so she'll be performing throughout the opening, and she's gonna like edit and like reinterpret it into a moving image piece, which will show throughout the whole show so people can still see the work if they don't get to see the performance. We've also got Sam Wootton, who he's a model, but he's been painting for about 3 years now. He didn't go to art school, but I've known him for quite a while. So kind of this is his debut like big show. He's done a few like really small exhibitions around South London, but this is his like first major show. Then we've got Mohamed Adel, who is also a painter. He studied at CSM. His work is really, really great and very fine art, like portraiture, fine art based.
And yourself, no doubt.
I'm not showing work. I don't practice anymore. But yeah, this show for me is kind of like my next steps of my own curatorial practice. So this is in fact my first proper project that I've been able to curate in a space in exactly how I want it. So I guess that's what I'm doing.
Nice. And is that where you want to go moving forward?
Yes, so I'd like to continue like working really closely with artists, but I'm currently working with Ellie Pennick, who's like the founder of Guts Gallery, on like on a business plan to kind of build an agency which works with artists to support them with like their contracts and commissions and stuff like
Excellent.
That, just to facilitate, you know, like fair pay and stuff like that, because that's what I've been studying. So yeah, that's what I'm working on now. But within that, I would still like to, you know, like host shows and curate. And I also write now a lot as well. I do like a lot of exhibition reviews. So that's kind of where I'm heading. But
nice.
At the root of it is like a curatorial practice still. So.
Well, it's nice to have a physical practice under your belt, isn't it? When you're moving forward.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Oh, it sounds great. What's the title of your curatorial group that you've got?
So the title is it's called Scratching the Surface, nice. And it's an insightful look into portraiture. So it's not so much about what we look at people and like kind of judge people on the outside. It's kind of like internal dialogues and conversations that the artists are working with. So a lot of the work is like, it's really a lot of it's really personal to them, but it's also a lot of it, like when you look at it, it's like the images of people that you see or the figuration of certain characters or whatever is a lot about like how they feel and emotions of those characters. And a lot of them kind of aren't recognizable people you know, it's more about like the emotion and the feeling and who they are at the root of their like their inner person. So yeah, a lot of the work is like, yeah, it's different, but
good.
It's a lot of deconstructed stuff.
And as I've mentioned on a few of these podcasts, it's an enormous site with several different areas. Whereabouts can we find Scratching the Surface?
Yeah, so luckily and really gratefully, we've been placed on the point of entrance. So we're in the building as you enter. And when you enter on the left, we've got a little room where Holly will be performing every hour. So it's me and Recreational Grounds in the first bit when everyone comes in. And then, yeah, you go down into the car park and then finally, obviously, the warehouse. So we've been put in a really, really good spot.
Nice.
And
have you got anything coming up after this or is that a bit vacant at the moment?
I've got I'm working on my dissertation right now. So that's kind of priority after the show.
And what's your dissertation on?
I'm actually looking at business models, like gallery models, and how to reform like the current commercial gallery model in order to provide like fair policies for artists and like basically what I want to do. So I'm looking at Guts Gallery. I'm looking at different galleries and agencies which are working in that way at the moment and supporting artists rather than representing them as a gallery. So they work with them in any way they need support and making sure they get paid and like, so that's what my dissertation is looking into. So I'm just looking at different models that are currently breaking the kind of status quo of that commission.
And there's definitely a gap in the market for that. As you were saying, what you was doing, I thought of Guts Gallery, because when I saw what they were doing, they felt quite fresh and just trying to break away from the norm. Sorry, there's such a gap between an artist trying to get into a gallery. There seems to be such a void in the middle, and it's that void that could be filled for so many fucking artists.
Exactly. Because the issue is, the gap is very intentional for a lot of commercial galleries.
Of course.
The less information artists know about how things really work, the more they could get bobbed off. And as I was an artist, I was running into situations like, that's not right, that's not right. All my friends are creative people, and I've worked with magazines. I've worked in all sorts of different creative sectors, and it's all the same weird stuff that's going on. And like, because I worked in galleries from like 15 to now, so I have a good understanding of the business side anyway. So when I stepped into being an artist, I thought it would be all right because I know. But then when you run into situations with certain institutions, you're like, I know what you're doing here, and I don't want to engage in this. Like, and it, yeah, so.
Yeah, you can almost feel them putting the barriers up in front of you as you're talking.
Exactly. So that's why I went to do the masters and actually learn about it properly, in detail, and like shadow people and do internships and stuff like that, just so I could really like get into the grit of it and then figure out.
Excellent. It's much needed.
Because that's literally what I'm about. That's literally what I'm about. So in my show, and I've got some artists of colour. I've got queer artists, I've got trans artists, I've got artists who didn't go to art school. I'm trying to facilitate everyone, which often doesn't happen because the art circles are so small, and like especially in London, and there's a lot of artists who are practicing who didn't go to art school, who are not in these circles, who don't know how to go about things. So yeah, part of my job is to just like kind of bring them into these spaces and show them things and just guide them through, basically. So yeah,
excellent. Good luck. Oh man, it sounds great. It's right up my street, and I wish you all the best with that. That's for sure. As I say, it's a void that's just waiting for people like yourself, and you'll absorb artists, I'm sure of it, once you get yourself established in that area, because it does feel like the upper echelons. I mean, the big names will always be at the top. They're not going anywhere. But it's the next level or two down. It feels like that they're a little bit scared. After COVID, when all the artists were going, well, like, we don't fucking need you.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need you nicking our 50% for doing fuck all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it. That's it. 20% is more than enough for a gallery to survive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Watch, I mean, I sell with one gallery, and they're only online, and they still charge 50%. Yeah. And they've not even got any bricks and mortar, you know?
I was just going to say, it's online, so what is that 50% going towards?
Yeah. I mean, but I'm in no position to sort of make that stance yet, because I'm not selling, you know, I haven't got anyone else selling it. But it's definitely a thing. When I've sold work for artists, doing it, like a lot of the stuff I do for charities. I put on exhibitions for charities, you know. So the artist does get 50% there, but the other 50%, all of the other 50% goes to the artist. Peshan, I'm there Wednesday. Hopefully I'll bump into you Wednesday or Thursday if you're still there. Worst ways, there. I'm sure we'll cross paths while the show's open between 9th and the 22nd. Peshan, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, mate.
See you later. Bye-bye.
See you.
Will. Hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.